Welcome to episode three of the Rugby Bits reviews of Chasing the Sun season two. Myself and Sean are back together. I've got the wheels this time. I've got the reins at 10. Sean is coming off my inside as my dual playmaker. But yeah, it's been great having these reviews over the last 2 weeks. And I mean, Chasing the Sun two has lived up to the expectations. But Sharky, first of all, how's it? Morning session this time. I mean, often we're podcasting in the morning, but overall review season episode three. What was your overall thoughts of it? Just the overall.
Hi, my man. Yeah, it's great to be back. My overall feeling is, why on earth did they stop it when they stopped it? I was just getting into it. Like, there was so much that happened, and then they get the game on, and we're so used to like the end of a game completing the season, the series, the episode, should I say? But yeah, the overall thing was, I'm just wowed. I'm wowed by so the conversations. The journeys that our Springboks have taken is nothing short of remarkable. Like, so many times you look back and you just think like there's just something so small that could have changed that we would not have seen Kirtley Arendse, or we would not have seen Bongi Mbonambi. Dion Fleury, like, as much as he said that his dad would never have wanted him to go home if something had happened, like, you know, that can change. So yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster. There's a lot going on, but I still think they keep a few things to themselves, and I'm definitely going to touch on that later. One of my theories with the Eben, Dwayne, and Sia situation.
My two biggest takeaways, Sharky, was one was the human aspect of some of the players. I think one thing as fans, we so gung-ho wanting the Springboks to win and wanting them to win, and we criticize performances or we praise performances, we praise coaches. We forget the humans too. You know, the Dion Fleury story, he speaks about, you know, his dad going to surgery, where he speaks about having a phone call about that could be the last time he ever speaks to his dad. That's gut-wrenching stuff. I mean, you know, for people who've lost parents or lost loved ones, to be in a situation and you all the way in France, like he's in the middle of his dream coming true, but at home, like he could lose his dad. And I think that's, for me, it's something that's massive. I think documentaries like this just puts that human feel and humanizes these players, actually, and reminds they are actually humans. Yes, they're doing an incredible job and they've got the country on their shoulders, but they're still human beings in the day with real problems that we face. And then number two, my second biggest takeaway was, I love the big, I think there's a big emphasis on the planning with the coaches this time, just being a lot more time spent in meetings, a lot more time spent hearing Felix Jones, Rusty Rasse's behind the scenes, how they're planning for France, how the preparation, as opposed to, yes, those are two games, but like I felt like there's a big emphasis on preparation and just seeing how detailed they are, hearing Felix Jones going, I went in a deep down on YouTube the night before and what he finds out, how Stick gets them going, what Stick is thinking, what them playing PlayStation, things like that. But we'll dive deep into that. But so those are my two biggest takeaways in the episode. And just so different. Like episode two had the Ireland feel and, you know, the frustration of how the Irish see us, and episode one was just getting us going. Like I just love how each episode is taking us on different journeys. And you can see it almost building up to the final, where I think everything just comes together. But Sharky, I think the start of episode three, which was probably one of the biggest shocks, even including Chase the Sun one, was when Rusty spoke about Rusty, Sia, and Dwayne almost not seeing eye to eye. Because that's something that we, you know, like you get guys on Twitter joke like, oh, is Dwayne the real captain? Is Ia the real captain? Is Sia the real captain? Like, you know, you get those things. Oh, guys love bringing that up, but we just never picked it up. And then when Rusty spoke about it, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? To the fact that he actually had to put them in a room together and be like, okay, you also have got 15 minutes to sort this out. But because you're trying to win a World Cup here, what did you think about that? And I want to hear your theory.
So my theory is that it was Dwayne and Evan. I think the issues or something came there. I love how they pick it up in the camp. I love how like Jacques and Rusty pick it up and then they address it. They're incredible, like, people leaders. Like, everything, like, it hits me so hard that everything in the Springbok camp is, we may be number one, but always think that you're number two. Like, always be chasing something, always be doing something. Like, don't ever feel like you're too big for the thing. But my theory is that I think there was maybe a small issue with Ibn and Dwayne. And I think Sia was brought in there as the captain, but also as like the leader, but a friend to both. Obviously, he's closer to Ibn, and you know, it's very well documented that they're good mates. But I think that, yeah, it's very interesting. I almost feel that Sia caught some strays there in that, like, he was just included in that you're not involved thing. So he can be like, whoa, what's going on? Like, let's fix this. Like, how are you guys jeopardizing my space? You know, so like, could it be a thing like you're the captain, you've got to take control. But yeah, just amazing. And we like, the nice thing that we're seeing is it's not all just beautiful and lovely roses, and it's a cruise. You know, there's things, there's always going to be conflicts. Like every team you play in, you're not going to see eye to eye with someone. There is going to be someone in that team that you're not going to want to share a drink with or spend time with having a bra. You know, every team has that. Doesn't matter what level you play. But at the end of the day, like, your number one goal is to play together. And, you know, if these two players don't like each other, in order for the team to like push to and be in the space they need to be, you guys need to just put your differences aside, sort it out, figure out who's the alpha, and go ahead, you know?
I think so. It's quite interesting that that sort of conversation happened also post-Ireland. You know, obviously the episode starts and Rassie's still gung-ho, and you're still, I mean, talking things about the, like, your head is getting bigger than your ability, things like that. And it must have been a very interesting week because, you know, that Monday's or whatever day with that review where it looked where Rassie's going to town, and then you've got him saying, like, these players are in the team against France. You Oaks have got to prove it against Tonga. And it's like, oh, geez, this is going to be interesting. And now you've got the Sia, Dwayne sort of thing. And Shoki, I think what makes this documentary so great and you struck it is the fact that it does show that the Springboks aren't this perfect machine. They just wakes up, you know, we give hope, everything is great, we're playing for our country. Yes, but at the end of the day, there are certain things that, like, in any functioning team, in any functioning company, societies, it's not always this gung-ho, it's not always this perfect, it's not always just... And the way the documentary sort of brings that together and shows that it's not like us as fans, sometimes we ever look into and think what we can see in it, but it just shows that not everything is perfect, but the way they're still able to come together for a common cause. Despite all of that, the main thing, still the main thing, is to win the World Cup. And you can see after the Tonga game, it does sort of come back together. And then, you know, the coaches, the players, the couple of days off, and the coaches go back that day off. And Sharky, have you noticed? But the Springboks is, once they deal with the issue, it's done. We've dealt with it, we move on, and then it's the next thing. They don't let it linger. Like, oh, geez, like 2 weeks ago. See. No, they deal, and it's harsh through. It's very harsh. It's very truthful. They'll call you out. But then once, like, you can see the mood change from the Tonga, after the Tonga week going into France. It was a different mood shift compared to how it was against Tonga, where who's playing? Oaks are worrying themselves. CS doubting himself. I love that transition and how the documentary showed that the box, they'll deal with it, but they quickly move on as well.
Yeah. They touch on it later in the episode when they talk about like how hard it is to analyze the Springboks because they literally field a different team. And we were banging on about how incredible the squad is, that you could probably play anyone in any game and you'll be like, cool, you know, he can do a job there. The big thing for me, though, is with Jacques Nienaber being the head coach and Rassie there as a director of rugby, it's very clear that he can be the bad cop. Yeah. In 2019, as the head coach, he can't be good and bad cop. So it was slightly different. You know, he was like being like cruising with the players and sorting stuff out. You know, there were a lot of issues that needed to be fixed, but they managed it in a different way. Very clear now, he's the bad cop and Jacques Nienaber was a good cop. Like, I don't ever see Jacques Nienaber as being a bad cop ever. And Rassie fits that role to a T. But yeah, it was great. I'm loving it. Like, I'm loving the personal aspect. You talk about like the individuals and the human side of it. That's the thing that people don't realize with athletes. Like, we watch someone on TV and we pass comment, but we really don't know the shit that's going on or the journey they took to get there, you know? And it's probably just food for thought for everyone that wants to be a keyboard warrior and sling shit, you know?
Talking about journeys, I mean, they spoke about Sia at the beginning and you got back from the quickly, so the injury so quickly, you forget what an amazing feat it is. You know, it could have been 9 months. You could have been at the World Cup. Just seeing the work that he went through to get back in there and then playing a very good, having a good tournament again, which is so blessed, Sharky, to have him as our captain.
Yeah, and Mr. T. Don't forget Mr. T.
And Mr. T.
Mr. T for president. Like, there are, we always know the people around the team that are adding value, but we look at that direct aspect. We don't see the indirect aspect of Mr. T, of Kirtley Arons' grandmother, of like all these other people around. So yeah, Mr. T, you legend. Thank you. Yes. Like, if we remember back, that injury and what was happening was probably the best kept secret ever. We didn't know. We were getting like
snippets.
Doctors
from walking. Like, yeah, is he going to be back? Or
yeah, doctors were like saying, "Well, I saw the injury, and this is what happened, and he's going to be out for X amount of time." And then like leaked of some other doctors saying, "You know, he's undergone this." No one knew a thing. Like, I don't think an NDA will stop people from talking. I think it's more about the biggest goal. I think the bigger goal was getting Sia back. And I think the reality of it, like, you know, because someone would have spoken on the side and no one would have really figured out who it was, you know, and it didn't happen. That journey is wild. So a while ago, I had my knee done, ACL, MCL, and my meniscus. And my leg still hasn't fully recovered. Like, my legs are still not the same size because, you know, I try to get back in the groove, but it was a long-term problem. Like, 9 months, I was looking at 12 months of, and 12 months of rehab is wild. So when Sia's doing this and 3 months, he says after 3 months, I'd had enough. 3 months. If I figure that out, I think 3 months, he was only 2 months away from the World Cup. Like, the carrot is still there, but what that man does for others, he says, but what he does as an individual with the drive of who he mentions, his family, his friends, the country, is huge. Like, that recovery he did was next level. And they said it was an ACL. That is wild.
Yeah, no. I think she reminds me a lot of, like, all the symptoms compared to Sia. It sounds wild to say, like, and like Graham Smith, in terms of the individual talents always get shipped to the side because of the captaincy, especially Sia and what he does. But people forget Sia's a fucking good rugby player. And he had probably going into the World Cup, he'd be playing the best rugby of his career, playing incredible rugby. And then to get back into the World Cup, sort of into the World Cup rehab, get back in the World Cup and during the tournament, get better and better and better, and then play very good rugby again is incredible. Because I've always said Sia, people just tend to forget what an amazing rugby player he is and how good of it. I mean, this is what, 2 or 3-time Springbok Rugby Player of the Year. Somehow, I think he's been nominated once for in the Rugby Player of the Year, the one year, I think 2021. It just shows the quality of the man, I think. But his captaincy, everything he does, sometimes does actually share, like overlook his actual playing ability. And I think, yes, it was great to have a captain there, but you can see the difference in big games and CS playing and not playing. Just in playing was the Springboks. And people forget that.
Yeah. If Sia could, like, even before 2023, the World Cup, like, people were talking about Khaleesi, he shouldn't be in the squad. Player X and player Y are way better. But, like, you've got to look at the bigger picture. The other thing is, if, like, that sort of died down a little bit, but Sia Khaleesi, if he didn't spend time in the trams running with the ball, it would be louder. We would hear it more. It would be nonstop because, like, that for many of the fans is like the ability of a player. Like, oh, he's so good because he's on the wing. So, yeah, but there's so much he does, like, unseen stuff. There's so much he does. I was actually, last night I watched the highlights of every single one of our 2019 games. And Sia Khaleesi, I didn't realize this, but he went straight to Chez and Colby after the final whistle of 2019, and he did it in 2023. You know, he's such a, like, he is constantly thinking of everyone else. Like, it's nonstop, and it is so evident. Like, he's such a great player, but the thing about him is he's so willing to do it for everyone else, to he'll do anything for anyone and run through a wall just because it'll help one of his teammates or anyone for that matter.
Chalky, before we go into the French game, or the first half, that frenzy of a first half in the French game, I want to talk quickly about the prep. I loved one of my favorite sayings and my favorite quotes that Jacques says, and he goes, "Oh, if we," it's like, "I was in this rut," and he goes, he speaks about, like, "I was in this rut of how are we going to stop the French? How are we going to stop the French?" And we've, you know, French rugby quite well, rugby, but we've discussed the French at extent. They were this well-oiled machine. they did become a side that had flair, but then had a substance to the all that flair, where it was like, shit, these Oaks, there isn't a weakness here. That was the only pack that I thought could match us starting and on the bench in terms of the way they built their squad. And I just love how Jacques quickly changed that mindset from, if we just spend all today trying to worry about these Oaks, instead of doing our strengths, we could get cut short. Like, we also got to fire shots. And it's so interesting when you look at that game, how the first half, France score, we score, how we also kept on firing shots, because we talked about a Sharky. That French side is just damn good. And the whole week, we're like, how do you beat them at home? How do you beat them at home? And if you told me on that Monday of the Friday that the Bucks would win that game almost in a shootout, I'll say you lie.
Yeah. The prep and the planning was incredible, but that hit me as well when Jacques said, like, 30 minutes ago, I was so focused on them, and that stops you from being focused on you. And, like, and it came across in that meeting as well. Like, they were talking about this and that, and it was crazy. We planned really hard. Felix, when he says he's going down a rabbit hole, you know there's going to be something fun coming out of there. I was chatting, well, Thomas was chatting to us on Twitter this morning, and he said, how crazy is it that you were able to beat us by watching our own YouTube videos? How they were like, how they like dive into what they needed to do and how they needed to prepare. But it was like that turning point, like that, oh, France at home, they're so good. They've managed to balance their flair with a kicking game and with everything else. And then it kind of started sort of evolving, you know, once they put their foot down, it started evolving into, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? Look at what we've got. And that, I think, is so important. And like, for many coaches and teams out there, you often focus on how to close an opposition team down, but you forget that they need to close you down. And it's a big thing. And they started, like, it was almost, well, it was so well done that we as viewers were also looking at it going, well, hang on a second, you're right. We also great. They're going to be analyzing us. And then they click into, well, what are they going to analyze? Like, here are six games, six different teams. We've got 300 scrum halves. We've got 35 players playing out of position. Good luck.
That's so true, because we had made so many changes to the team. And we are, I mean, even as fans, like, oh, when are we going to pick the same size so we get some sort of consistency? And that actually helped us going into the French game, because it was, geez, okay, what team do we look at? Because probably the only team that was any sort of, had the best preparation for the Springbok was England, because we played the exact same team. We picked the exact same side for England we did against France. But for France, it is looking at five or six different sides. And Faf is, because you play differently when Faf is playing. You play differently when Marnie's playing. You play differently if Jaden's starting with Marnie, or Andre's playing with Moody. It's so many different sides. But what I found interesting is I loved how they captured, like, when the Spurs were busy playing PlayStation and sort of getting themselves in the zone. And, like, I loved how the DVD, I'm sure the Gareth and the guys were together, the guys at TNW, probably thought they struck gold when you could actually visibly see Rassi looking and going, shit, I see something here. And then he's like running around. And it's not often you actually capture those. You hear the stories about, like, okay, cool, do this. We've done this. We saw this. But it's not often you see it in real time where you can honestly see him like looking and like pressing something and going on the computer. Like, you can see his mind ticking over, because he's not actually articulating sentences at that time. He's just going, wait, guys, I see. Wait, I think. Just come look here. And then eventually that plan sort of comes forth. And then you fast forward and you see Delaney scoring the try. And you see the plan working completely. That, for me, was some of the genius that it's great to see the coaches at work and seeing those moments happen almost firsthand.
Yeah, and I think what also is highlighted by that, and you bang on, like, you can actually see that light bulb go off, you know, you go on, you can just see it. And then you're like, oh, there's something coming. The thing is it shows you with teams that are so competitive. We headed into the 23 World Cup with probably the most amount of teams that had the chance of winning it than ever before. We saw massive matchups all through the tournament, and it was wild. But it shows you what crazy little things make a difference. Like, that is something so small, and it works once because you can't do it again.
100%.
They will come up to that in the game. The fact that we scored off that is crazy. The fact that Chez and Colby scored off the grabber, the fact that Chesney and Colby charged down that kick, like, this is all preparing yourself for when that moment comes. Like, that's the whole thing. Andre Pollard said it, like, before he got his call up, he's like, I've got to stay fit just in case the opportunity comes. And I've got to be ready. Like, you have to be ready. I think Money said it as well. And that's it. Like, we plan for so many different scenarios. The fact that they come off is wild. Like, they could the reality is that couldn't have come off. We could have prepared as well, and it just wouldn't have happened. So it's crazy. But watching Russie see that and plan it, deliver, and then call it something as silly as purple, I suppose it's an upgrade from the move. But yeah, it was wild.
Of all the Springboks, I've got great trades. I think the naming of set pieces is not great. So they need to get a creative director in there to come up with, like, better names for our set pieces, because the move in purple, like, we can do better than that. Come on, Oaks. Like, I think that's hopefully Tony Brown and Jeremy Franley can come up with this. Just better naming, just need better names for our moves. But talking about planning, I mean, we got to talk about the Damian Williams a moment, but what I found interesting is our first originally thought it was to slow down the tempo of the game for the Springboks. That was my first thought, like, man, this game's at high pace. Let's actually call the scrum just to, so we can also just,
yes,
let's breathe. The French are, but I didn't, when Russell spoke about, and Jacques and Phil spoke about how actually the game plan for the French is something, I mean, we've watched, how many French games have you watched? But I'd never noticed how the forwards just stood in the middle and just watched the ball go over. And something I never noticed, and they just, And for them to spot that and go, listen, these Oaks are flipping resting here. No wonder they can't be at high tempo for so long, because they're spending so much time resting and no one kicks the ball more than the French. But again, to think of that and then be, like, then to go mark, call the scrum, because I think a lot of people also forget a mark is a free kick. Like, that's what I completely forgot when that met. I mean, I was in the same boat as Justin Marshall in the comments. I was like, what on earth are we doing here?
Yeah. Crazy. Sidebar, like, Russie chatting to Don Heumann saying you're not going to get paid for one scrum a game was wild. I didn't realize that we only had one scrum against them in 2022. One scrum a game. In fact, I remember something along those lines about how we didn't impact in the game. I didn't realize it was one scrum, though. But brilliant. Brilliant way of managing it, because the truth is the distance that the French are able to kick, when you kick it out, they're definitely have made meters, definitely.
Yeah.
And then they get to strike and up their tempo. And it was interesting how they managed that. But, like, again, as I mentioned before, there's small things that you look at and you're like, cool, this is what we need to do. But then still to get a scrum penalty, because at that time, I can't remember exactly, but we weren't dominating in the scrums. Like, the scrums probably went on the feet every time. I don't think there were too many penalties before that. But that was a great thing. And Dwayne Vermeulen talks about it so great. Like, he says, cool, like, you know what's happening. But then this happens, and automatically you as the French side are like, what's going on? Oh, they've called for a scrum. Oh, hang on. What are they going to do? What's happening? What's their plan? So you start thinking, and as Rusty and Jacques spoke about, like, you start constantly thinking about the opposition, and that stops you from being you. And, like, that scrum was brilliant. The fact that they planned and they did it and everything aside, Damian Willemse, the way he executed it was world class.
Yeah.
Just thank you. Put the ball down. Scrum. Yes, that's what I asked for. And then he runs back to his position.
Yeah, I think it's the drama and it's so cinematic the way he did it. But I was thinking about this, Sharky, about this, that French first off. I mean, he had everything. I mean, I forgot that scrum happened in the first off. And then I'm like, oh, that's the Colby charged down. Then there was the Eben yellow card and the Eben play. I was like, jeez, all this happened in the first off. But what I thought about in the first off, I think the French game is probably... It shows, and now this episode, Chase the Sun, shows that was probably the box in a 6-year span. This is going to sound wild to say, probably the best box performance in terms of, like, just performance wise. Because look at the things that helped us win against the French, the 1%, is things that the box have always talked about. You know, just going the extra mile, you know, backing the system. The Eben play is having a rush defense that's been fine tuned since 2018, where if you're the last man, you're going to shoot. rather force them to make a good decision, force them to make a good pass and get after you, but you're not going to stand and just shadow them. You're going to press. What does he do? Sees the pass. I'm going to go for it. If he pump fakes, goes over, I can live with the consequences. But then you look at like the Damian Williams play. It's picking up on small details, which the Springboks have shown how detailed they are in their planning, those small things. Then you get the purple. It's, again, finding one opportunity to score, because as good as the Springboks were, and the French were also very good, those are the fine margins it took to win the game by a point. And interesting, like, yes, I understand 2019 World Cup, we were outstanding. That was a great, great performance. And from that, but England were poor. And like, but like now it was like, the French were at their very, very best, and we were at our best. And it's just the smaller fine margins. That's why I look at it now, like, the performance that grows in my esteem, because then that Colby makes a play, like with the charge down. There's so many things there. It's so, you look at the 6 years about the Springboks they've had, and Chasing the Sun has documented that. Some of the, like the Colby play sums up what the coaches speak about the right character. The players speak about the man and him walking away from the huddle, and the Springboks taking the initiative where they'll go, okay, Chesney sees something, we're going to carry on here. But that's how the relationship and the culture that's been built in the Springboks, where it allows you to thrive, allows you to be you. And then that opens up the game, and Colby obviously makes the play of the World Cup with that charge down.
You've absolutely nailed it when you said they're going to huddle and then Cheslin moves away and they think, okay, he's got something cool. Like, let him do what he's going to do because he's got something down. We're going to just carry on doing our thing. Sekulesi at that moment was hilarious. He was like, and then Cheslin just walks off. and then, yeah, just brilliant. You know, talk about like moments and things that matter. That even Etzebeth hand was incredible. The angle they showed on Chasing the Sun was great because it definitely doesn't go forward of that angle. So I'll stick with that. I think probably such a great call. Ben O'Keefe making that call live.
Real time. Under that situation.
Yeah. In France with the crowd and all that happening. And if you watch it, France stop. The French players stop. They put their hand up and they're like, what's going on? South Africa carried on. We turned it and then we let rip. Like, incredible. Seeing that live, and to be fair, he was bang in line. Like, he was totally in line with it. So, incredible call from Ben O'Keefe. And the other moment, you talk about 2019, that moment in the final just before halftime, I think it was 20 phases of defense or 15 phases of defense against England. There are these certain moments that teams have and teams need in order to kind of click over into that belief. Like, you always know you're going to win, but you need a moment to be like, cool, we've got this. Ebens was one in 2023, and that 2019 defensive run against England before halftime was the other.
100%. And I think what I love about the Colby moment is the way he speaks about it. It wasn't just him going on a whim, like, okay, let me just try and do something here. It's the way, even when the interview goes like, it's five steps to the left. And then he goes, and then he goes up, and then he knew when it's time, when he goes. So that's what I love. It's even through what looks like a kamikaze, a last ditch play, there's a planning to it.
Yeah, the planning that was also so big for me was, and you're right, like it is the plan. So, and everyone trusts everyone. Everyone knows what's going to happen. They know that player is going to do something that's going to matter, and they all commit to it. And that's the big thing, is trusting a player to do something, and then you just go with it. There's no like, oh, hang on, what's he going to do? Like, let's bring him back. But I tell you, like, Colby and his whole talking about it was all about, I just want to get in his eye line. I just want to get in his eye line. I want to throw him off. We've got to put him under pressure. That's what it's about. Like, what are people going to do under pressure? And then the fact that he realized that he was so close, like, hang on a second, let me just cut in, is wild.
No, 100%. And Ramos is such a great kicker. And you think all of that to go, that's the fine margins between winning a quarterfinal, not winning a quarterfinal. And before we go, I mean, obviously the ending was, it was such a funny, I mean, it was such a great cliffhanger, because at that stage, I mean, Shark, you can remember that 15-minute period after halftime, we weren't great. We were holding on and holding on and holding on. And I love the way they were building up. You can see the French, even in the end of the episode, it's like they're building a momentum. You're like, oh, geez. And then they kept coming and kept coming. And then that little cliffhanger, that cliffhanger ending, because what surprised me, I was like, shit, is it 9 o'clock already? Because that episode flew by.
Crazy, man. Did my head in. Like, such a brilliant way to end it. A week is a long time to wait. You've got like 6 days and 23 hours to wait until the next one starts. So just wild. Cooks, there's two things that I do want to chat about, but going back to the Tonga game, we spoke about like players and what they do and how they deliver. Makazulo Mapimpi's injury in the Tonga game really hit me hard. But again, he just shows what an incredible human he is. He's like, I'm in a place where this player wished he would have been, or this person, or this, like everything I'm doing is delivering. I'm in a space where someone else would really want to be there. Just amazing. And the other thing that just brought an incredible bit of laughter out of Sia Khaleesi, but something that I loved was when Khaleesi got run over in Tonga and Evan's like, was that a back?
I loved how Evan laughed at him in the middle of the game. He like laughed. He's like, because I mean, listen, Ben Tamafuna is not a small human being. And that's, and anyone could get bowled by Ben Tamafuna. You get it slightly wrong, you are flying, but I still love how he's at a back. But no, like, and my pimpy, just to wrap it up, I just love how he talks about, like, it's like, Sharky, the growth in them, through all of that, through the heartbreak, the first thing he goes, you know what, I worked hard to get here, I'm in the World Cup, someone else does not have the opportunity I have now. And it's a hard thing to see at the time, and I love how he reflects back, and that's how he sees it now. He goes, man, you know, you could easily just beat yourself up and go, shit, man, like, why is this happening to me? And he just goes, you know what, there's guys at home who never played a World Cup. I've won one. And I'm back for a second one. I won man of the match in one of the games. You know, like, it's just incredible, like, those players, the way they see themselves. And I think the way it shows the culture that is there amongst the camp. And it's not a phony culture, because there are shit also that happens around, which we've seen as well. But I just love the culture and just the way they speak about it. But, Sharky, we do. Fortunately, time is up. We could speak about chasing episode 3 all day. We will be back next week. Hopefully, one thing I do know, Shark, is we do beat the French. That's if it's a spoiler for some people who don't know, we do win the game. So when you're stressing this weekend, just remind yourself that, okay, we do win. Because I have a feeling this week's episode, the France game and England game, TVs might be thrown at. TVs might be broken, because there'll be frustrations, especially when you get to the England game.
Absolutely. Just knowing the way they've set up Chasing the Sun, they'll probably start episode 4 without even carrying on finishing the French game. They'll probably just talk about it, and we'll all be just like, well, hang on a second, if we missed something.
But episode 4 is the second of the French game. That's episode 4. 40 minutes.
and then they're going to squeeze episode 5 into the semi and the final. But yeah, just incredible. One of the most anticipated things, like, so many people are looking forward to it. So many people overseas are trying to figure out how to access it. If I'm not mistaken, it's the first sports documentary that's been put on like primetime viewing on DSTV. So yeah, incredible stuff. Two more weeks, and then I'm gonna go back and I want to watch like the game and the episode and the game kind of together, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Two more weeks, but that's a wrap from us, the Rugby Bits, and our episode 3 preview of Chasing the Sun 2, a review. Guys, please make sure you like and subscribe. We appreciate all the support. It'll be up on Twitter soon. And also, most importantly, our pod, Rugby Bits pod, will be up, should be today, Sharky, I think. Okay? Our pod from
probably yesterday. This afternoon or tomorrow.
This afternoon will be up where we chat Champions Cup. And then, yeah, lots of rugby to look forward to, and lots more conversations to look forward to. Sharky, thanks again for your time. We'll be back next week to discuss season episode 4 of season 2 of Chasing the Sun 2.
Ciao.